This is the third segment in the Shidduchim series. The first was Torah perspectives to dating and marriage. The second was, which we did in two parts, a self-evaluation for readiness for Shidduchim and marriage. And today we're going to get into some of the practical methods of how to get started and what to do and what not to do, the sort of the practical do's and don'ts. There are many mistakes that people make even in the process. There are two reasons as to why we try to present this guidance. Number one, because of maybe bigger issues, which are through a wrong process, we can often get blinded and make a mistake, and that may be the biggest mistake that one makes in one's entire life. So we're looking for safety measures and safety protocol and procedures to better ensure that we have safety nets, that the right decisions can be made. The second issue is one of Bein Adam L'Chaveiro, because if we don't understand the expectations and we end up offending another person, we need to realize that that offense is something that even Yom Kippur cannot be mechaper for, it doesn't atone for. Specifically, speaking to men, on the men's side of things, we need to understand that there's a general vulnerability when it comes to Shidduchim, because everybody understands that my life hangs in the balance. Okay, because as we said, depending upon whom you marry, my life will be unalterably changed. So number one, we're dealing with a basic vulnerability, and that's pretty much equal for men and women. But there's a second component, which is the greater emotional sensitivity that most women have. And therefore, doing something that's offensive can be devastating to a man, but even much, much more so to a woman. And therefore, you need to, rule number one really is, one always need to be the gentleman. I'm just going to bring an illustration here, which is a very sobering one, and it's a little bit off the mark, but nevertheless, it's a real reflection. One of the greatest Talmid Chachamim in his generation, in the time of the Chasam Sofer, was Rav Mordechai Benet. And Rav Mordechai Benet traveled from his hometown to another large city, and he was suddenly nifter. So they buried him in the visiting city. And then people from his hometown made a fuss and said he should have been buried where he was the Rav. And what right did you have to bury him there? And there ensued a horrific machlokes, which took 6 months until it was resolved by a teshuva from the Chasam Sofer, who said that he should be disinterred and removed and returned back to his hometown. And after the Chasam Sofer sent out that teshuva, Rav Mordechai Benet came to the Chasam Sofer in a dream. And he said, you might wonder, why is it that a person of my stature would have such a machlokes after his death, and such negativity and divisiveness? And why is it that I would have the busha, an embarrassment of being buried in the wrong location and then have to be disinterred and reburied? He says, the answer is that when I was 18 years old, I was engaged to a girl in the town where I was just buried. And for some reason, I broke the shidduch and I never got a full mechila on the part of this girl. And I was engaged to her, I believe, he says he was engaged to her for 6 months. And there was a gzeira min hashamayim, a decree, that I would have to be buried next to her for 6 months before having my rightful burial place. And when they checked with the Ziknei Ho'ir, the elders of that city, they found out that Taka, in the immediate vicinity of where Rav Mordechai Benet was buried, was a woman who many, many years prior had been once engaged to Rav Mordechai Benet. At any rate, that's a spooky story, but it gives us a little bit of a glimpse into the sensitivities a person has to have in terms of Bein Adam L'Chaveiro. Now, there are many improprieties, insensitivities. The overwhelming majority are made out of ignorance. There was an extraordinary shatran who dealt mostly with Balei Teshuva here in the American scene, in the New York scene, who told me about 15 years ago, maybe a little bit less, maybe 10 years ago, she said to me, I deal with in Shidduchim with Bachrim from every yeshiva for Balei Teshuva, certainly every major yeshiva in the world. One thing I can tell you is that the Bachrim in Ar Samech of Muncie, somehow or another, know better. They're better informed. They seem to have better midos, or I don't know what it is, but they just know better how to do the right things, not to offend the girls, not to get into messes, and I really don't know exactly what that is. And I said, it's these shiurim, it's the tapes. So she said, can I have a copy of the tapes? We sent her a copy of the tapes. She called back, can we copy these tapes and give them out to other people? I said, gizunt hate. So therefore, I'm just going to add one little nakuda, and that is that that literally thousands of dating situations or problematic snags within dating situations have been brought to me. And I would say that at least 75% of the time when a problem occurs and something goes wrong, it's because somebody violated the rules. Somebody didn't do things in the appropriate manner. And had he done them the right way, then we wouldn't have hit, developed the problem, would not have developed. And therefore, it's important to understand these issues fundamentally as well as the specifics and to chazer them. If chas v'shalom, the dating process takes a longer period of time, then from time to time you need to review this material. First, we need to understand fundamentally what is the purpose of the design of what we call shidduch dating, which is having a medium, having a go-between. There are two purposes, two reasons for that, for the system. Reason number one of having a shadchan rather than simply, quote, doing it yourself, reason number one is tznius purposes. Because instead of having to examine all the girls in the world and vice versa, there is a go-between that's sort of a screen in between. But the second issue is that there's a buffer for purposes of mutual respect. Instead of putting the other person on the spot, do you want to go out with me? Do you want to go out with me again? And then the person might blush and the person might say yes when they really meant no. And then if it's no, then mamanavshach. It's a greater offense and one feels more hurt if it's a direct no. And as I said, sometimes a bacher or a girl will say yes when they really mean no. So it's to avoid putting people on the spot. That's the ultimate purpose and design of the shidduch system. Now, I'm going to try to get as much information as I possibly can in the brief time that we have. I'll just try to outline that there are three different kinds of shidduch dating. One is, I'll call chassidish, where they find out everything conceivable beforehand, including what you eat for breakfast on Wednesday mornings. And then they meet once or twice, or certainly very, very briefly. There was a major machlokes between, I think I may have mentioned this, the Satmar Rav and Rav Bik. Did I talk about that? Where Rav Bik, who was a major Hasidish apostate in Borough Park, said, after he saw a lot of Gittin in the Hasidic world, he said, I'm not a being Masada Kedushin ever unless they go out at least eight times. And the Satmar Rav didn't like that. He felt that wasn't sneezed to go out eight times with a girl, see a girl, and not go out, go in. In the house, eight times. So when he met Rav Bik, the Satmar Rav quipped, he said, Katzti b'chaye, quoting last week's parsha, Katzti b'chaye, I'm disgusted, mipnei b'nois ches, because of the daughters of eight, ches. So he said, I don't like this b'nois ches business. So Rav Bik answered him, he said, Satmar Rav, he said, you are a Rebbe. You might even be a Rav, but I am a Dayan who sits on a Beis Din of Gittin. And I'm afraid to say that in this case, I have more experience than you. And I maintain my nice chassid. Even in the Hasidic world, it's a relatively short dating process. There is what we'll call, and I hate to use labels, yeshivish dating, which basically means you find out quite a bit beforehand, not as much as in the Hasidic world. And then it's a question of checking things out, which usually takes 5 to 10 dates, to basically check out various components before making a decision. And then there is what I'll call dating for Balei Teshuva, where you find out something, often less than in the FFB world. In the FFB world, remember, everybody lives in a community. Everybody davens in a shul. You just find out which shul the guy davens in, who the close friends are. And so it's relatively easy, much easier to find that basic information and detailed information in advance, number one. Number two, there are buzzwords in the FFB world. The moment you hear, so the father learned in Chathishailis, did the father learn in Chaim Berlin, or did he learn in Ner Yisrael? Is he a little Hasidish, or is he a little this, or is he that? And then there's an enormous amount, you know. If the girl's mother, you want to know if she went to Prospect Park or Yeshiva Brooklyn. The moment you hear Prospect Park, Yeshiva Brooklyn, there's a whole world of information that gives you a pretty valid assumption in terms of the kind of home the girl has been raised in. Those don't exist in the world of Balei Teshuva. And therefore, the dating of Balei Teshuva is mistakenly sometimes switched for that which is in the yeshivish world, but 5 to 10 dates are extremely dangerous for the world of Balei Teshuva and certainly requires several months. But we'll talk about that later. Get straight into how does one get started? Practical things. If you're assuming you're in yeshiva or you have mentoring rebbeim, and that's really the first starting point. One must have a mentor, a shidduch mentor, preferably a Rebbe who's skilled and schooled in this, or at least a balabas or a balabasta who, again, has a lot of practical knowledge about people, good judgment, and experience in advising and mentoring people in shidduchim. So if you're in yeshiva and you want to be introduced to a shadchan instead of just knocking on the door, doing independent work yourself, it's usually advisable to have a Rebbe who knows you introduce you first to the shadchan, then go and meet the shadchan. Also, you notify, obviously, people that are close to you that you're interested in meeting appropriate people. It is said, colloquially, that the word shadchan is Rosh HaTevis, it's an acrostic, Shin Dalet Chaf Nun, which stands for Sheker Doiver, they speak falsehood, Kesef Neitel, and he takes money. Okay, that's the Rosh HaTevis of, because there are many professional shatran that will try to pawn off, you know, this any girl on any bacher, especially if there's a possibility of making a buck. We don't recommend those kind of shatranim. The great Maharil, who is the single greatest source, probably the plurality of Ashkenaz Minig, as quoted by the Ramah, comes from the Maharil. And in the Sefer Maharil at the very back, who is Talmud, who really wrote the Sefer, writes some historical description of the life of the Maharil and says that the Maharil supported the entire yeshiva that he headed, never took a salary from the yeshiva, but he supported the yeshiva by the shadchanus money that he took. He was an incredible shadchan, and he also had this nishma'idic sense, and tzadik geizav HaKadosh Baruch Hu Mekayim, pretty much any shidduch that the Maharil would suggest came to fruition, and he would get a shadchanus money, and he would use that money to help support the yeshiva. So, obviously, these are two poles, the Maharil and the Sheker Deiver Kesef Neitel Shatran. We're looking for people who really want to help, and they are rest assured that there really are many, many, many individuals who want to work L'Shem Shamayim. Of course, it's a requirement to pay Shatranas anyway, even if the Shatran doesn't ask it, and that's supposed to be a segula for Shalom Bayis. It's very, very important to give a very nice gift. Shatranas works out. But if a shatran speaks a shidduch, and the shatran says, just go out and see her on my say-so, and starts perhaps pressuring you. So, should you ever go out with a girl because the shatran says, see her on my say-so? So now we need to assess the shatran, which means, is this a shatran, number one, whose judgment is very good? Is the shatran a bar or bas da'as, person with very good evaluative judgment? That's question number one. Question number two is, does the shatran know both you and the girl well? If the answer is no to any of these questions, then no matter what the shatran says, you say, as role of shatran, it's your responsibility, I say this respectfully, to provide me with leads, with names, with references on this girl. It's not a degrading thing in the slightest to ask for references on a person. In fact, that's part of the respectfulness of it. You wouldn't want to go out with any Tom, Dick, and Harry, or in this case, you know, Jane, Sue, and whatever, or Bracha and Sarah, you know, nor would you want the girl to do this, to be indiscriminate. You would want her to have the self-respect to choose very discriminatingly with whom she would want to go out. And it's the Shatkin's role to provide you with good leads of well-known people in a community who know this girl well. And if the Shatkin says, well, I don't know anybody who knows it well, you don't have to be the FBI, CIA to go try and ferret out this information yourself. And in fact, even in the FFB world, where it's easier to do so, parents often call me and I say, just call the Shatkin. Tell the Shatkin to call the girl. But she says, I never spoke to the girl yet about the Shidduch. That's okay. Just tell the girl that I have an idea of a Shidduch for you, or people are inquiring. I'd like you to give me some references, give me some of your close friends, also give me some mentors, maybe some rebbetzins or rabbonim or people who know you and your family well, who can provide references. Crucial at all points, something I mentioned before, daven for the right shidduch. We mentioned Kapitel Kuf Chof Aleph in Tehillim, Eso Einai Elohorim, Me'ayin Yovei Ezri, from where is my Ezer Kenegda going to come? The Chofetz Chaim writes that one should be very careful never to daven for a specific shidduch. Something might look glorious, something might look incredibly good, but when you turn the corner and we can't see what's around the bend, that incredibly good, apparently wonderful, super-duper shidduch may really be disastrous around the corner. We never really know what's around the bend. It may not be good for me, and sometimes a person can sort of override one's mazel with tefillah by pushing too hard. Don't daven for a specific girl. And a critical thing that I learned from a Rebbe of mine, always daven, whether it's in the initial stages or in ensuing stages, in the middle of dating a specific girl, always daven that if the answer is going to be no, let her be the one to say no, not me. The reason being, if you davened that if it's not going to be anyway, let her be the one to say no, you didn't have to offend her. So you avoided the main adam l'chaveroi problem. Also, it's easier to take. It's easier to swallow if you davened that if it's no, she's going to be the one to say no. So, and Shitaka says no, so at least, you know, that's what I davened for. It's not easy. It's not an easy pill to swallow, but nevertheless, psychologically, emotionally, it's easier to handle if that's pretty much what you asked for. What if nothing happens? What if there's nothing going on? Things are pretty dead. Well, we need some more tefillah and some more hishtadlus, more effort. May go to a... may have to keep on calling or meeting with shatchanim. Often, some of these people who are involved in shidduchim see hundreds and hundreds of people. And whatever is foremost in consciousness just is on his or her mind. So if you periodically make sure that you see these people or that you call them up once in a while, it's not something to be ashamed of. I just want you to know I'm still here and... I'm still available if you have any ideas. I'd appreciate it. You can even leave a message. And again, it raises the consciousness of your ubiquitousness, okay? Right. Of your availability to the various shatchanim. But sometimes if you really try all of your hishtadlus and nothing seems to be happening, you might be doing something wrong. There's some excellent guideposts, and Shaya Astroff is one of the greatest experts in the world on shidduch mentoring, and he's written an extraordinary book. Sometimes you need to change some of your methods. You need to talk to a Rebbe. Sometimes you need to relocate. I remember a bacha came to the yeshiva, and without any details, he started dating over here, but he apparently hated the New York scene. He just hated New York City and wasn't comfortable in Muncie either. And he said the only place he was really comfortable, one of the places he had lived in, was Chicago. So I said, but the problem is that there's almost no girls in Chicago. This is where the action is. This is where everybody is. But he says, I'm depressed over here. Well, the bottom line was that after trying it for several months, and if you're depressed, you know, you can't really date well. You can't project yourself and present yourself well. So Beles Breira, with a heavy heart, we sent him back to Chicago, where he looked for a job, got a job, and 2 months later got engaged to the sister of one of our alumni, who happened to have been in Chicago. So it was Min HaShemayim that he had to be depressed in New York because the girl was waiting for him in Chicago. We had, years ago, we had actually an extraordinary maisa with a Russian Talmud who had gone from Russia to Eretz Yisrael, been in the Russian army, the Israeli army, very interesting and colorful character, and learned in a yeshiva there, and looked for a shidduch for a while, unsuccessfully. His Rosh Yeshiva went to Rav Shach, Yibodim and Chaim L'Chaim. Rav Shach said, let him go to America for 6 months. So he came, letter in hand, recommendation, came, learned here, 6 months, and he dated up a storm. I don't know, hardly remember anybody dating as much in 6 months as this guy dated. And at the end of 6 months, nothing happened. So he called his Rebbe in Eretz Yisrael. Rebbe went into Rav Shach again. Rav Shach says, let him come home. So we made him a farewell party. I remember the story that I told in the drasha, the drata that I said at the farewell party. And I said, look, it was obviously min hashamayim that he was supposed to be here, although he came for a specific person that didn't pan out, a specific reason that didn't pan out. Nevertheless, there was a purpose in his coming. I'm sure maybe it was so that we would meet him, we would learn, get to know him. He would pick up good chaverim and learn whatever. And he went back, and 2 weeks later, Rabbi Kokas gets a call from his shatran and says, is this guy Yisrael here? How do we get a hold of him? So Rabbi Kokas says, I'm sorry, he went back to Eretz Yisrael. The shatran says, wonderful, because the girl I have in mind for him has a ticket in hand to go back to Eretz Yisrael. But she says, you know what? If the bachur is here, if it's a good shidduch, I'll delay my trip. But if he's in Eretz Yisrael, she's going next week to Eretz Yisrael. Who do we contact there? His Rebbe. So Rav Yossi Brook of Netivot Olam was contacted, and she saw him there, and she married him there. She got married. So he had to come to America to meet the shatran, who knows the girl, so the shidduch was spoken here, but he came because a gadol b'Yisrael recommended that he make some kind of a change. So sometimes we actually need to make changes, and preferably do so with Das Torah. As a rule, the shatran speaks to the bachur first, introduces the shidduch to the bachur first, not to the girl. And that's in deference to the girl. Why? Because if he speaks to the bachur checks out the girl. If for some reason he's not interested, so he tells the shatran, you know what? I'm not interested. What does the girl know about this? Zilcho. So she never hears that she's rejected. And therefore, giving deference to the girl, considering her more sensitive, then it's presented. If you say, yes, I'm interested in seeing this girl, by the way, now you are committed. Totally committed. The moment you said yes, you're committed. Now it's the girl's side, her chance. If she says no, so then you have to swallow the no. But somehow us guys seem to be tougher than the girls. We suppose, supposedly so. So again, the shidduch has spoken to the bacha first. If you say yes, I will see this girl. If anybody wants to speak you a shidduch, It's not advisable to even listen. Why? You can say, you know what, I'm committed. As soon as I'm free, I'll let you know. But as far as for all practical purposes is concerned, you are totally and completely committed because you gave your word that you're going to see this girl. Now, what happens if it schleps? 3 days go by, 5 days go by, a week goes by, a week and a half goes by. That's too long. People shouldn't be sitting on a suggestion of a shidduch that's formally presented that long. You should receive an answer. If you feel that you're being held up too long, and there isn't an exact science to this or an exact measure, but certainly if you've been waiting for 3-4 days and you heard no answer, you certainly have the right to call up the shatran and nudge the shatran to nudge the girl because you want an answer. If it really schleps too long, it's over a week and you don't get an answer, you could call up the shatran and say, I want you to know other shidduchim are being spoken to me, and my commitment is timed, it's time sensitive. I can't wait around forever for her to give an answer. If she's not prepared to give me a positive answer, you can give an ultimatum. If I don't get an answer within 24 hours, then I'm going to move on to the next thing. That's perfectly legitimate. Of course, you say it tactfully, you say it kindly, try to say it as sweetly as possible, but nevertheless, the message is given. Once you said yes to see a girl, and especially if you called her, there's an absolute commitment. It's given that you're going to see her. Even if you saw her once, and actually I'll give you a case history. Somebody saw a girl once, and it was okay. Told the shatran okay, and he called the girl. I don't even know if he called her for a second date, but he already told the shatran who conveyed to the girl, you can expect to receive a call. Just at that point, he discovers that the girl's father is a ganef, is a ramai, is a lavanik. And the guy was jailed, and the guy was imprisoned, and it would be an absolute bullshit. There was no way that he's going to marry this girl. because of the father's scheming nature, character. So he went and asked his Rebbe, what should I do now? The Rebbe said, if the girl was told that you're going to see her again, even though you know you're not going to marry this girl, you've got to go out and see this girl again. So he went out and saw the girl a second time, and did his best to act uninterested, to act, you know, not to put, and was hoping that the girl would not be interested in seeing him again. It happened not to have worked. Now the Shatkan, who knew nothing about this, called for the next year, 6 months to a year, and said, what was wrong with that shidduch? The girl was so interested in you. And he took our advice, which is never argue with a Shatkan. And he just said, personality. I can't put my finger on it, but there's something, it just didn't work. Personality. And the Shatkan asked again, and he acted like he used the broken record method. Today's broken tape. You don't have broken records anymore. Okay, we don't use records. Okay, but in my days we had broken records. So he just kept on saying personality, and she could never eke out any more information from him until the whole thing just died. Don't allow yourself to be pressured by a shatran. Sometimes you really have a wise shatran and a very experienced one who knows a lot more about shidduchim than you. And if you get, and that's the sense, and the shatran is not angling for more money, the shatran is not angling for covet, but sometimes can actually make a valid point to you that you should consider. But at other times, the shatran, you are clear about your decision, and the shatran is trying to pressure you into seeing someone. Never allow yourself to buckle under pressure, but always be polite. So again, if it's clear to you that it's something you don't want to share with the shatran, so you use the personality, or there's another word for personality, chemistry. Okay, you know what? It's just because that's a sort of a loose, nebulous type of thing, and just keep on repeating it. If you made the error of telling the shatran the reason, and the shatran tries to disagree with you, and the shatran says that's not a good reason, you might ask your rebbe or mentor and check it out. And if your feelings are corroborated, then you go back to the shatran and say, you know what? I have a lot of qualities, and I'm sure you see them, which is why you spoke me a shidduch, but I also have a chesaron. I have a personal drawback, and that is I'm a stubborn person. I'm very stubborn. And when I said that this was a deal breaker for me, even though you disagree, what should I do? I can't help myself. I'm a stubborn person. And so you sort of semi make a joke out of it, but the bottom line is you don't allow yourself to be pressured when it's not really in your best interest. Now, I generally have advocated that when you're calling the girl for a date, you make that telephone call short. The function of that call is, hello, I heard nice things about you. I'm looking very much forward to seeing you. And, you know, when can we get together? Basically come straight down to business. I know that there are a lot of girls who don't like that, because a lot of girls like to schmooze over the phone, and they're not interested in the short 5-minute date. But on the other hand, looking at the whole picture, the bigger picture, I have seen many, many more people get into trouble by talking on the phone rather than in person, and therefore I strongly don't advise talking a lot on the phone. Let's just understand, I mean, just to touch upon, outline briefly what some of these issues are. Sometimes a bacha might be a very good listener, and just like a person who is blind will all of a sudden have an increased acuity of hearing, so too, when you can't see the person, and all you can do is hear, there are many people who listen with great concentration, and they pick up on things over the phone, and they're disappointed before they ever see the girl, or they jump to conclusions. Sometimes their assumptions are wrong. They'll jump to conclusions. They'll say, this girl is a yenta. This girl is shallow. This girl is this or that. And all of a sudden, they postled or disqualified the girl without really giving it a proper chance. And they may have had a very different impression if they had were able to see her more holistically. And the other thing is that a significant, maybe even majority, of communication is body language, it's facial features, it's smiles, frowns, and all the like. And there's an awful lot you can pick up on that. All of that is hidden on the phone. And therefore, on the phone, all you get is voice and inflections and so on, and they can often and usually or very frequently are misread. Therefore, don't go there. You need to call up, make the appointment. Even if the girl doesn't like it that much, hopefully she'll like you. If she likes you, the shidduch will go through, despite the fact that you had a shorter telephone call initially. Second, extremely important. Once you've told the shatran yes, and you got a positive answer back from the shatran says, here's the girl's number, you can call her, don't delay. If you sit on it then for 5 days, that's inui hadin. That's prolonging and sort of making the girl wait. Remember, since in the system you're the one who's making the telephone call, the girl feels powerless because she can't initiate the call. You're the one right now who's in control. So be sensitive and don't abuse that control. Call as soon as you possibly can, such as the same night. When you call and set a date, don't postpone the date. Don't say, I'm busy this week, and this weekend I'm going away, and the next week I'm going to be busy too. You know what? How about seeing you in 2 weeks? That shows that you don't care, that you're not interested. And if you really couldn't date for 2 weeks, then why in the world did you pick this time to tell the shatran that I can go out with this girl? So again, there can be extenuating circumstances, especially with long-distance dating, and I'll talk about long-distance dating later. But as a general rule, if the two of you are in the same general locale, then you try to go out as soon as it's mutually possible. When you go out, dress code, you dress in your Shabbos best. You're showing respect for her. And the same way you would dress on Shabbos is pretty much the way you would dress when you go out on a date. If you've been going out a number of times already, and now you intend to do some kind of activity which doesn't, or you want to show her that I don't always dress like this, I'm only dressed this way because of dating, and I would really like her to see how I usually am, even then you would dress maybe a little bit nicer than your lowest casual attire. But nevertheless, if you're going to be doing some physical activity, hiking or whatever, it's okay to dress down, providing you let her know in advance. And you discuss it with her, say, is it okay with you? And sort of allow her to dress a little bit more casually as well. And then it doesn't end up that you come, you know, in casual attire, and she's dressed in, to go to a chasna. I remember a complaint I got regarding a bacher who came on a first date wearing a sweater, cap, and sneakers. And the girl was mortified. More recently, I remember feedback of a bacher who came. It was taka, very cold weather. But he ended up going, it was a bacher from Ar Sameach and Bal Teshuva, who was going out with an FFB, a very prominent family. And he came in a ski cap. Now, the ski cap all up, and they went out to her. The girl was, she understood and was very accepting of, had no problem with the fact that he's a Bal Teshuva. But they went to a pretty fairly local restaurant where she met people who knew her, and she was expecting the guy to wear a black hat. And if you don't normally wear a black hat, you don't put on a black hat, but not the ski cap that guy was wearing. Darko shel ish lachzor achra ha'isha. The Gemara says that it's the way of the man to go after the girl. And therefore, if the girl is in a different locale, you don't say, I'm not going to see her unless she comes to see me. If she's in Baltimore, well, you go to Baltimore to see her. If she's in Brooklyn, you go to Baltimore. If you tell the shatran, I'm only willing to see her if she comes up to Muncie, because I'm a very busy man, then you're egocentric and you're not following the dictum of Darko Shel Ish Lachzer Achar Ha'isha. What if it's Takadis? She's in Washington, D.C., Philadelphia, Baltimore, and it's, a 2, 3, 4, 5 hour trip. Boston, what do you do? Well, or further, Toronto. The rule of thumb is, and again, this is not etched in stone, but this is a good, healthy rule of thumb, the first 2 times you go there, if it's a trip. And after 2 times, and of course you go for a little bit more of an extent, you go for a weekend and you have to see her a couple of times, but after 2 times you can expect reciprocity on the part of the girl. So you go out there 2 times, if it's a big schlep, you're not expected to go there all the time, but after roughly 2 times you can anticipate reciprocity and that suggests to the shatran that she come up to see you. Sometimes you can also make pshara's compromises where after a while, again, not at the beginning, but after a while you can say, well, how about meeting halfway? It's a big schlep, and if I don't my schedules don't really allow for this so much, but if you're in Philadelphia, that's 2.5 hours away, what about meeting at a midpoint somewhere? So it'll only be 1.25 hour drive for each of us, approximately. And from there, we'll go in my car, and we'll go somewhere and do something. That can be acceptable, again, not at a first or second date. What about long-distance shidduchim? You spoke in a fabulous shidduch with the girls in Chicago, Detroit, wherever, China. Okay. So here's an excellent rule of thumb. Don't invest money, time, and putting pressure on the girl by traveling long distance to see her before you've determined that it's at least a good possibility. How do you do that? The answer is telephone dating. You arrange with the shatran, I would like to date this girl on the telephone first. At least a minimum of 2 dates. At least 1.5 hours apiece. And what you do is you set up a time. You call up the girl and ask the girl, when is it a good time to set up a telephone date? Which is the shatran informs her of this first. And if you can schmooze with her, if you talk with her over the phone for 1.5 to 2 hours, and there's a lot of mutual interest, and you do it again another time, a couple days later, or whenever, and you've established the fact that there's a lot of mutual interest and there's enough going, and you can be very open with each other on the phone because it's a huge investment of time and effort and money. Then and only then you pick yourself up and you fly or ride to the Torontos or these places out of town. How do you maintain a long-distance shidduch? Now, it's always more problematic than doing it local, because when you do it local, you can slowly but surely build up a healthy and decent relationship. How do you do it long distance? Well, once you've gone out there for a weekend, my recommendation is don't allow a gap of more than 2 weeks, if at all possible, between meetings. So if you go out there to California or wherever it is, and you see her for a couple of days, a telephone date. And this has come up a number of times when you have a long shot in the dark. And this is how it usually happens. A bacha comes and says, my grandmother, who was not particularly religious, was riding on the train and she met this wonderful, very religious girl. So she said, do you know that I have a grandson who's a very religious young man and he's learning Yeshiva? The girl says, really? And she really takes a liking to this girl and says, you know what? I want you to meet my grandson. So now, this could be, you know, your grandmother's perception of what religious is or what you like or what you maybe might be completely off. So at that point, it's perfect. And there's no shatran to speak of, because your grandmother can't be an appropriate shatran usually. So what you do then is you take the number. You have to call the girl, because otherwise you can't talk to your grandmother, right? Can't go. So what you do is you call up the girl and say, listen, this may sound funny, but I understand that my grandmother met you, and I don't know if this makes any sense at all, but would you want to talk over the phone a little bit or set up a time to do so we can see whether or not this is a hava amina, we're in the ballpark whatsoever or not. And that's completely appropriate. Then, if you are in the ballpark, then you try to figure out between the girl and yourself of some person, shatran or rabbi, who knows both of you. Or you set somebody up, and then you set up a shatran, and then you date her formally. Always a good rule to have a shatran. Not any shatran, because there are a lot of shatranim that, as we say in Yiddish, make kal, you can ruin things. But having an intelligent, emotionally intelligent shatran with good judgment can often really make, can help people past snags, and it also can avoid a lot of personal discomfort. It can avoid a lot of personal discomfort. So it's always good to have a shatran. When you come, set up a date and you come, be punctual. Coming late is a bad reflection. It shows that you don't care, or that you're a schlep, or that you're not responsible. If you are late through circumstances beyond your control, make sure to call the girl and let her know that you're going to be late. Often a girl is nervous, anxious, and then the guy doesn't come. It can be read as being impolite. Where do you go on a date? Well, I'm not going to give you specific locations, although I do have a list in my office that somebody sent me. But there are a couple of different rules of thumb. The idea is like this. The first several dates, you want as few distractions as possible. When I was a bacher, Rebbe of mine suggested to me, he said, even though this is not necessarily so conventional, and it's become less conventional, but this Rebbe of mine said to me, ask the girl if it's possible to meet her, if there's a private place in her home where you can meet her. Because if you can sit across the table or across a cocktail table, sofa, and with no other distractions, and if you can't be interested in each other enough to talk for 2-3 hours, then nothing is going to come of the shidduch. I'm not recommending as radical, and I did that a lot, whenever possible. But the concept is certainly a valid one. You're looking for the first several dates as few distractions as possible. What you really want to do is see whether or not you interact well with the girl. You want to see whether or not there's an interest. And you're not interested yet in seeing how she interacts with other people, with Jews, with non-Jews, with kids, with all kinds of other situations. There is time for that, which is once you've been dating a couple of times and you want to now start developing the relationship, that's the time when diversification is advisable. That's the time you can go to the zoo or to the aquarium or this or that or the other thing and meet other people. Somebody came to me once and said, I went out on a first date and it was an absolute disaster. I said, what happened? He said, it was summertime. It was raining cats and dogs. I went to the girl's home, picked her up, and I was going, aiming for a hotel, wanted to sit in a lobby of a hotel that was about 20 minutes away. There were sheets of water. I got hopelessly lost. I went out 13, 14 times to ask for directions. I got all wet. It took me 2 hours and 20 minutes to get to the hotel. By the time we finally got to the hotel, we couldn't park directly in front of the entrance. We had to park in the parking lot. We had umbrellas, but the wind was whipping the rain sideways, so the umbrellas didn't help. By the time we came to the entrance of the hotel, the lobby of the hotel, we were drenched as if we had gone into showers with our clothes on. We're dripping solid wet. We come in there, and everybody looks at us because we're dripping nice, you know, posh hotel lobby, and here we are dripping all over. You couldn't sit down. We'd make our little fabric wet. We finally found some Nogahide seats. We sat down, and the air conditioning was blowing like mad. So inside of 5 minutes, we both started chattering and shivering, and we saw that we was trembling. I saw the girl started shaking like this, and I couldn't stay here. So after 10 minutes, we left. We got back into the car. This time, it only took me 40 minutes to get home, and the shidduch was a disaster. And I said to him, that was a great shidduch. Absolutely great shidduch, because dressing up in your Shabbos best and going out with this girl to a lobby, how many times in real life after you're married are you going to be doing things like that? The answer is, I can't remember the last time that I just did that in 31 years of marriage. Okay, so it's really an artificial, contrived, orchestrated setting, and it's not real life. But how many times in real life do things not go the way you planned? How many times do you get lost? How many times do you get wet? That's a great measure of what happens in real life. So I consider that a great date. She didn't want to see him again, but that was besides the point. Okay. But as far as getting a sense, we had another bach who came to me once, and he really had to schlep from Perth Amboy, but with public transportation, New Jersey, to a whole circuitous route to Flatbush, to Brooklyn, to see this girl. And as he came to pick up this girl and take her out, all of a sudden, moments before, there had been an emergency, a medical emergency. Her brother had cut himself very badly in glass in Lakewood, New Jersey. And this girl was a very capable girl. And it was a holiday weekend, and doctors weren't available. And she got Hatzolah, and she got Bikur Cholim involved. So they sat him down. She apologized. There's a medical emergency going on. They gave him some food. She came out every 5 minutes. But he observed this girl, who was incredibly capable, working like a whirlwind, had every connection conceivable, much more so than her parents, and was orchestrating this whole thing to get her brother to be transported to have vascular surgery in Manhattan somewhere on this holiday weekend, etc. And the bottom line was this took 2-3 hours. He ended up going to Mincha with the father. The girl kept on coming out every 10 minutes, apologizing. He got to see more about this girl and the qualities she had than he ever possibly could have if they had simply sat in a hotel lobby just smoothing. But nevertheless, I still maintain that for the first couple of dates, it's a good idea to have as few distractions as possible. Beware yichud. You need to know the good halachic, the parameters of hilchos yichud well. You can be going on a hike. If you go to Harriman State Park on a hike, and you're basically isolated, then you will have violated the halacha of yichud. If you travel very late at night on relatively isolated streets, as opposed to highways and major thoroughfares, you can be violating hilchos yichud. So make sure you brush up and read up, at least on the basic inyanim of hilchos yichud, or ask a shayla if one comes up. Sensitivity. Don't take a stroll in the neighborhood where the girl lives, where everybody's peeking out the window and looking at who this girl is going out with, and you don't want all the yentas in her neighborhood, so she might be very sensitive to that. Also, good idea to plan in advance where you're going. And sometimes people, wisely, even will do a practice run. If they're not familiar, they got information from a friend, it's a good place to go. They sometimes try to arrive early and actually do a practice run so they know where to park a car, and you don't have to do that, but sometimes things go smoother if better planned. I know somebody who got advice from a brother-in-law who was sort of semi-from about a great place to go, a restaurant, a lounge to go, and he came there, and it was an absolute disaster because all of the waitresses were half-dressed. And the brother-in-law didn't in his mindset, he didn't think of it, but he was mortified so sometimes it's a good idea to make sure that they have reliable information and you check it out beforehand. If you take her out during meal time, if it's a lunchtime or a supper time, then you have to ask her out. You have to take her and offer her a meal. And if she says she's not hungry, if you picked her up at 1 o'clock in the afternoon, 2 o'clock in the afternoon, and somehow it really got late and now it's 10 o'clock at night, and you know she hasn't eaten a thing, she hasn't eaten the bifonai, you were with her all the time for the past 9 hours and she hasn't eaten a thing. And you say, are you hungry? She says, no, I'm not hungry. Well, she is hungry, but she's just being overly polite. So if it's mealtime, you have to take her out for a meal. I once got a complaint of a bacher who took a girl out and it was mealtime, so he took her into an eatery and he bought himself a meal. And he didn't buy her one. He figured if she's hungry, let her buy a meal. Okay. The girl did not see him again. Okay. Important rule of thumb. I know of a chassan where the kala came to his city to visit him, and he arranged for the kala to be staying at a home of friends of his. But they were out late, and by the time they got back to the house, the people were sleeping, and the girl forgot her key. So what does he do? So he found a hotel and he dropped her off at the hotel. But he didn't pay for the hotel room. She was this kala. He's supposed to be taking care of her. Okay. She didn't like that. No heavy issues on a first date. The tachlis of a first date is just to see whether or not you like each other. Whether or not you're comfortable with each other. The question you need to ask yourself after the first date is, did I enjoy her company? And were there any jarring things that demonstrate to me that she is, like, not in the ballpark? You're Jewish, she's not Jewish, or something like that, is there anything jarring that demonstrates to you? When I was here in Muncie years ago, I'll digress for a moment. So a Hasidisha Rebbe, not a Rebbe, but a Malamet, in the Vizhnitsa Cheder, knew me a little bit, and he called me and he has something urgent to talk to me about. So I come in, he says, I have this gewaltige shidduch for you. And it ended up, the girl was much older than me. The girl had broken engagement. The girl was, any of the details just didn't work for me. So I said to him, why in the world would you have suggested this shidduch for me? So he says to me, and look at the cultural mindset. He said, I heard that your father is an Erlacha Yid, he's a devout Jew, and he doesn't have a beard. This girl's father is also an Erlacha Yid, and he also doesn't have a beard. Therefore, I thought that must be a good shidduch. Okay? So I said, you know what? I passed this one along to my father. I said, you know, my shidduchim is screened by my father. Why don't you call my father? Here's his telephone. And then I quickly called my father and I said, forget that shit. Okay. You want to make sure there aren't any major deal breakers, but the objective is to be light, no heavy issues. Even on ensuing dates, you try your best not to ask things that are too personal, like directly asking her age. You want to be tactful. I know of Bachrim who have gone out on dates, and they came with, like, interrogators. They had a list of questions. He said, I don't beat around the bush. The guy says, you know, I want to... And he comes, asks her one question after another. And obviously, that's not what a girl wants. That's not what it's all about. The famous story is of the bachur, who is the yeshiva bachur, who is very nervous about dating and doesn't really know what to do. And the shatran's trying to reassure him. So the shatran says, listen, it's very simple. All you have to do is ask there are three subjects you have to talk about. The first thing you do is you ask about family. The second thing is you talk about love. The third thing you do, you discuss philosophy. Those are the three major subjects you're supposed to talk about, said the shatran. So he goes out with his girl and goes blank. And he remembers the shatran says, you're supposed to talk about family. So he says, do you have a brother? And she says, no. He's supposed to talk about love. So he says, do you love noodles? Do you love lakshin? And she says, no. Now, two down. One more. It's a philosophy. He says, if you would have had a brother, would he have loved Lakshin? Okay? So, you can tell jokes if you like, but no heavy things. Don't be too direct. Don't ask her age. Don't ask her if she's healthy, you know, if she's... always be the gentleman. Be chivalrous. Yes, the Gemara says that a man should walk before a woman. So if you go before a door, you may want to go through the door before her, but make sure you hold the door open for her behind you. Critical issue, escort her all the way home, especially if it's a place like New York City. But no matter where it is, it's usually often late at night, 11, 12 o'clock or later. You sit there in the car in front of her door until she is safely inside the door. That is the thing to do. You might be in the city, and you might have come in by train. And you went out in Manhattan. She lives in Brooklyn. And the last bus back to Muncie is 11:30 at night. And if you go straight to the bus station, you can make it back, make the last bus. And she says, I go home all the time. I use the subway myself. Or you could put her in a cab, or I'll take a cab, and you might even offer to pay for the cab. That's not good enough. If you take out a girl, you must bring her back and see her into the door. And anytime someone has violated something like this, they've often gotten into trouble. So escort her all the way home. Another rule of thumb, don't ask her out again without the shatran. Why? Because you're putting her on the spot. Girls are very, very good about faking it, making believe. They may even really, genuinely have a good time, but they don't want to see you again for some reason. They may have a good time, but not everyone you have a good time with would you consider marrying. Maybe she just can't look at your nose. Who knows what it is, you know? So the bottom line is, you don't ask her directly. At approximately a third or fourth date, using your judgment, third or fourth date, if your reading of the date is that she likes you, that it really went well, even at that point, you still don't put her on the spot. You semi-put her on the spot. You say, would you prefer still going through the shatran, or would you like us to talk ourselves about whether we continue dating? That's the tactful way. Now, she might say, if she's gung-ho and completely open and ready, then she's going to say, I think we can talk about it ourselves. Then she might say no. Okay. Then it's assured that she's going to say yes. But if she says, I'd still prefer going to the shatran, that doesn't mean that she's going to say no. It might mean she wants to think about it. Or she's not at the stage yet where we're sort of ready to be winging it on her own. A telephone date. And this has come up a number of times when you have a long shot in the dark. And this is how it usually happens. A bracha comes and says, my grandmother, who was not particularly religious, was riding on the train and she met this wonderful, very religious girl. So she said, do you know that I have a grandson who's a very religious young man and he's learning Yeshiva? And the girl says, really? And she really takes a liking to this girl and says, you know what? I want you to meet my grandson. Now, this could be, you know, your grandmother's perception of what religious is or what you like or what you maybe might be completely off. So at that point, it's perfect. And there's no shatran to speak of. Because your grandmother can't be an appropriate shatran usually. So what you do then is you take the number, you have to call the girl. Because otherwise you can't talk to your grandmother, right? Can't go. So what you do is you call up the girl and say, listen, this may sound funny, but I understand that my grandmother met you, and I don't know if this makes any sense at all, but would you want to talk over the phone a little bit and or set up a time to do so, so we can see whether or not this is a hava amina, whether this is, we're in the ballpark whatsoever or not. And that's completely appropriate. Then, if you are in the ballpark, then you try to figure out between the girl and yourself of some person, shatran or rabbi, who knows both of you. Or you set somebody up, and then you set up a shatran, and then you date her formally. Always a good rule to have a shatran. Not any shatran, because there are a lot of shatranim that, as we say in Yiddish, make kal, you can ruin things. But having an intelligent, emotionally intelligent shatran with good judgment can often really make, can help people past snags, and it also can avoid a lot of personal discomfort. It can avoid a lot of personal discomfort. So it's always good to have a shatran. When you come, set up a date, and you come, be punctual. Coming late is a bad reflection. It shows that you don't care, or that you're a schlep, or that you're not responsible. If you are late through circumstances beyond your control, make sure to call the girl and let her know that you're going to be late. Often a girl is nervous, anxious, and then the guy doesn't come. It can be read as being impolite. Where do you go on a date? Well, I'm not going to give you specific locations, although I do have a list in my office that somebody sent me. But there are a couple of different rules of thumb. The idea is like this. The first several dates, you want as few distractions as possible. When I was a bacher, Rebbe of mine suggested to me, he said, even though this is not necessarily so conventional, and it's become less conventional, but this Rebbe of mine said to me, ask the girl if it's possible to meet her, if there's a private place in her home where you can meet her. Because if you can sit across the table or across a cocktail table, sofa, and with no other distractions, and if you can't be interested in each other enough to talk for 2-3 hours, then nothing is going to come of the shidduch. I'm not recommending as radical, and I did that a lot, whenever possible. But the concept is certainly a valid one. You're looking for the first several dates as few distractions as possible. What you really want to do is see whether or not you interact well with the girl. You want to see whether or not there's an interest. And you're not interested yet in seeing how she interacts with other people, with Jews, with non-Jews, with kids, with all kinds of other situations. There is time for that, which is once you've been dating a couple of times and you want to now start developing the relationship, that's the time when diversification is advisable. That's the time you can go to the zoo or to the aquarium or this or that or the other thing and meet other people. Somebody came to me once and said, I went out on a first date and it was an absolute disaster. I said, what happened? He said, it was summertime. It was raining cats and dogs. I went to the girl's home, picked her up, and I was aiming for a hotel, wanted to sit in the lobby of a hotel that was about 20 minutes away. There were sheets of water. I got hopelessly lost. I went out 13, 14 times to ask for directions. I got all wet. It took me 2 hours and 20 minutes to get to the hotel. By the time we finally got to the hotel, We couldn't park directly in front of the entrance. We had to park in the parking lot. We had umbrellas, but the wind was whipping the rain sideways, so the umbrellas didn't help. By the time we came to the entrance of the hotel, the lobby of the hotel, we were drenched as if we had gone into showers with our clothes on. We're dripping solid wet. We come in there, and everybody looks at us because we're dripping nice, you know, posh hotel lobby, and here we are dripping all over. You couldn't sit down. We'd make our little fabric wet. We finally found some Nogahide seats. We sat down, and the air conditioning was blowing like mad. So inside of 5 minutes, we both started chattering and shivering, and we saw that we was trembling. I saw the girl started shaking like this, and I couldn't stay here. So after 10 minutes, we left. We got back into the car. This time, it only took me 40 minutes to get home, and the shidduch was a disaster. And I said to him, that was a great shidduch. Absolutely great shidduch. Because dressing up in your Shabbos best and going out with this girl to a lobby, how many times in real life after you're married are you going to be doing things like that? The answer is, I can't remember the last time that I just did that in 31 years of marriage. Okay, so it's really an artificial, contrived, orchestrated setting, and it's not real life. But how many times in real life do things not go the way you planned? How many times do you get lost? How many times do you get wasted? That's a great measure of what happens in real life. So I consider that a great date. She didn't want to see him again, but that's besides the point. But as far as getting a sense, we had another bach who came to me once, and he really had to schlep from Perth Amboy, but with public transportation, New Jersey, to a whole circuitous route to Flatbush, to Brooklyn, to see this girl. And as he came to pick up this girl and take her out, all of a sudden, moments before, there had been an emergency, a medical emergency. Her brother had cut himself very badly in glass in Lakewood, New Jersey, and this girl was a very capable girl. And it was a holiday weekend, and doctors weren't available, and she got Hatzolah, and she got Bikur Cholim involved. So they sat him down. She apologized. There's a medical emergency going on. They gave him some food. She came out every 5 minutes, but he observed this girl who was incredibly capable, working like a whirlwind, had every connection conceivable, much more so than her parents, and was orchestrating this whole thing to get her brother to be transported to have vascular surgery in Manhattan somewhere on this holiday weekend, etc. And the bottom line was this took 2-3 hours. He ended up going to Mincha with the father. The girl kept coming out every 10 minutes, apologizing. He got to see more about this girl and the quality she had than he ever possibly could have if they had simply sat in a hotel lobby just schmoozing. But nevertheless, I still maintain that for the first couple of dates, it's a good idea to have as few distractions as possible. Beware yichud. You need to know the good halachic, the parameters of hilchos yichud well. You can be going on a hike. If you go to Harriman State Park on a hike, and you're basically isolated, then you will have violated the halacha of yichud. If you travel very late at night on relatively isolated streets, as opposed to highways and major thoroughfares, you can be violating hilchos yichud. So make sure you brush up and read up, at least on the basic inyanim of hilchos yichud, or ask a shayla if one comes up. Sensitivity. Don't take a stroll in the neighborhood where the girl lives, where everybody's peeking out the window and looking at who this girl is going out with, and you don't want all the yentas in her neighborhood, so she might be very sensitive to that. Also, good idea to plan in advance where you're going. And sometimes people wisely even will do a practice run. If they're not familiar, they got information from a friend, it's a good place to go. They sometimes try to arrive early and actually do a practice run so they know where to park a car, and you don't have to do that, but sometimes things go smoother if better planned. I know somebody who got advice from a brother-in-law who was sort of semi-from about a great place to go, a restaurant, a lounge to go, and he came there, and it was an absolute disaster because all of the waitresses were half-dressed. And the brother-in-law didn't in his mindset, he didn't think of it, but he was mortified at, so sometimes it's a good idea to make sure that they have reliable information and you check it out beforehand. If you take her out during mealtime, if it's a lunchtime or a supper time, then you have to ask her out. You have to take her and offer her a meal. And if she says she's not hungry, if you picked her up at 1 o'clock in the afternoon, 2 o'clock in the afternoon, and somehow it really got late, and now it's 10 o'clock at night. And you know she hasn't eaten a thing. She hasn't eaten a bifonai. You were with her all the time for the past 9 hours, and she hasn't eaten a thing. And you say, are you hungry? She says, no, I'm not hungry. Well, she is hungry, but she's just being overly polite. So if it's mealtime, you have to take her out for a meal. I once got a complaint of a bacher who took a girl out, and it was mealtime, so he took her into an eatery, and he bought himself a meal. And he didn't buy her one. He figured if she's hungry, let her buy a meal. You know? Okay. The girl did not see him again. Okay. Important rule of thumb. I know of a chassan where the kala came to his city to visit him, and he arranged for the kala to be staying at a home, a friend of his. But they were out late, and by the time they got back to the house, the people were sleeping, and the girl forgot her key. So what does he do? So he found a hotel, and he dropped her off at the hotel, but he didn't pay for the hotel room. She was this kala. He's supposed to be taking care of her. Okay. She didn't like that. No heavy issues on a first date. The tachlis of a first date is just to see whether or not you like each other, whether or not you're comfortable with each other. The question you need to ask yourself after the first date is, did I enjoy her company? And were there any jarring things that demonstrate to me that she is not in the ballpark? You're Jewish, she's not Jewish, or something like that, is there anything jarring that demonstrates to you? When I was here in Muncie years ago, I'll digress for a moment. So a Hasidisha Rebbe, not a Rebbe, but a Malamet, in the Vizhnitsa Cheder, knew me a little bit, and he called me and he has something urgent to talk to me about. So I come in, he says, I have this gewaltige shidduch for you. So it ended up, the girl was much older than me. The girl had broken an engagement. The girl was, any of the details just didn't work for me. So I said to him, why in the world would you have suggested this shidduch for me? So he says to me, and look at the cultural mindset. He said, I heard that your father is an Erlacha Yid, he's a devout Jew, and he doesn't wear, but he doesn't have a beard. This girl's father is also an Erlach Yid, and he also doesn't have a beard. Therefore, I thought it must be a good shidduch. Okay? So I said, you know what? I passed this one along to my father. I said, my shidduchim is screened by my father. Why don't you call my father? Here's his telephone. And then I quickly called my father, and I said, forget that shidduch. Okay. So you want to make sure there aren't any major deal breakers, but the objective is to be light, no heavy issues. Even on ensuing dates, you try your best not to ask things that are too personal, like directly asking her age. You want to be tactful. I know of Bachrim who have gone out on dates, and they came with like interrogators. They had a list of questions. He said, I don't beat around the bush. The guy says, I want to, and he comes, asks her one question after another, and obviously that's not what a girl wants. That's not what it's all about. The famous story is of the bacher who is the yeshiva bacher who is very nervous about dating and doesn't really know what to do, and the shatran's trying to reassure him. So the shatran says, listen, it's very simple. All you have to do is ask there are three subjects you have to talk about. The first thing you do is you ask about family. The second thing is you talk about love. The third thing you do, discuss philosophy. Those are the three major subjects he's supposed to talk about, said the shatran. So he goes out with his girl and goes blank. And he remembers the shatran says, he's supposed to talk about family. So he says, do you have a brother? And she says, no. He's supposed to talk about love. So he says, do you love noodles? Do you love lakshin? And she says, no. Now, two down. One more. It's a philosophy. He says, if you would have had a brother, would he have loved lakshin? Okay? So, you can tell jokes if you like, but no heavy things. Don't be too direct. Don't ask her age. Don't ask her if she's healthy, if she's... Always be the gentleman. Be chivalrous. Yes, the Gemara says that a man should walk before a woman. So if you go before a door, you may want to go through the door before her, but make sure you hold the door open for her behind you. Critical issue, escort her all the way home, especially if it's a place like New York City. But no matter where it is, it's usually often late at night, 11, 12 o'clock or later. You sit there in the car in front of her door until she is safely inside the door. That is the thing to do. You might be in the city and you might have come in by train. And you went out in Manhattan. She lives in Brooklyn. And the last bus back to Muncie is 11:30 at night. And if you go straight to the bus station, you can make it back at make the last bus. And she says, I go home all the time. I use the subway myself. Or you could put her in a cab, or I'll take a cab, and you might even pay for the cab. That's not good enough. If you take out a girl, you must bring her back and see her into the door. And anytime someone has violated something like this, they've often gotten into trouble. So escort her all the way home. Another rule of thumb, don't ask her out again without the shatran. Why? Because you're putting her on the spot. Girls are very, very good about faking it, of making believe. They may even really, genuinely have a good time, but they don't want to see you again for some reason. They may have a good time, but not everyone you have a good time with would you consider marrying. Maybe she just can't look at your nose. Who knows what it is, you know? So the bottom line is, you don't ask her directly. At approximately a third or fourth date, using your judgment, third or fourth date, if your reading of the date is that she likes you, that it really went well, even at that point, you still don't put her on the spot. You semi-put her on the spot. You say, would you prefer still going through the shatran, or would you like us to talk ourselves about whether we continue dating? That's the tactful way. Now, she might say, if she's gung-ho and completely open and ready, then she's going to say, I think we can talk about it ourselves. Then she might say no. Okay. Then it's assured that she's going to say yes. But if she says, I'd still prefer going to the shatran, that doesn't mean that she's going to say no. It might mean she wants to think about it. Or she's not at the stage yet where we're sort of ready to be winging it on her own.